San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Hi, this is Richard Muzio with It's Your Money and Your Life, and we've got the first part of a very special three-part series starting tonight, focusing on Servant Leadership Institute and their fifth annual national conference coming up here in lovely Coronado at the Coronado Marriott on March 9th and 10th. And you don't want to miss not only this show, obviously, which you're already listening to, but the next two shows on Feb 21 and February 28th. February 21st, we're going to have Ken Blanchard, the internationally best-selling author and leadership expert, along with Debbie Marriott Harrison, who's in charge of corporate culture for the Marriott Corporation. And then on February 28th, Stephen M.R. Covey, talking about the speed of trust, again, one of the leading experts in leadership in this country, along with a couple of great guests from WD-40. But right now, we've got a special guest for this first part of our three-part series. And we are here with Cheryl Batchelder, CEO of Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. And Cheryl is going to be one of the presenters at Servant Leadership Institute's fifth national conference in Coronado at the lovely Coronado Marriott Hotel on Coronado Island on March 9th and March 10th. Great event. Check out www.servantleadershipinstitute.com. for more information. But Cheryl, really appreciate you being able to join us this evening. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And have you presented at Servant Leadership Institute events before, or is this your first time?
This is my third time to visit this conference, and I really look forward to it. This is a great group of like-minded people that comes together every spring and hears from some great speakers across both thought leadership and industry.
And can you give away the title of what you're presenting yet, or is that sort of a secret?
My topic, I call it Dare to Serve, How to Drive Superior Results by Serving Others. And it's the story of the turnaround of Popeye's, a restaurant chain of about 2,300 restaurants around the world. And we have used servant leadership as the path to our business turnaround and have created results that have outperformed our industry.
Now, I know you have a very interesting history because if I understand this correctly, you joined Popeye's as their CEO shortly before the big economic downturn circa 2008, correct?
That's correct. I joined Popeye's in the fall of 2007. We created our strategies and our investment plans for the fall of 2008, and it was a very interesting time to launch a brand turnaround. We made major investments, and I think in retrospect, our courage to go forward with our plan while the rest of the world kind of hid under the desk and retrenched. We came through the recession growing our market share. Our market share has grown from 14% of chicken quick service restaurants to 23% today.
Wow.
Huge momentum. And I think it was largely because of our courage to invest into the downturn and take care of our customers. They've rewarded us with their business after the downturn.
But with your franchisees, was there a lot of panic around that time? I mean, the economy is going in the wrong direction. You're proposing that things are going to be changing. Was that really stressful for a lot of people?
Of course it was. It was a, we were placing some big bets on the future of our brand, but we believed in our brand. And we, our franchisees and our franchisor offices, work very closely to stage our investments so that the Popeye system would fare well. For example, we invested heavily in advertising to build market share, but we waited until the business recovered to invest in remodeling our restaurants. And just this past year, we finished remodeling 80% of our system, but we held off on that until the franchisees were ready.
And in a business where you have franchisees, is there some inherent stress anyway because of the franchisor-franchisee relationship sometimes being one of stress depending on how fast, like, for example, a franchisee wants to grow versus how much the franchisor is trying to accomplish?
Well, there's some natural tension between the franchisor and the franchisee. But my experience is that the brands that grow their businesses and for both the franchisor and the franchisee work together to accomplish that. Brands that have internal warfare going on are not focused on beating their competition. And so what I'm probably proudest of in our work at Popeyes is the partnership that we've created with our franchise owners. Our franchisees have given us a 93% satisfaction rating.
Oh, that's excellent.
Past fall, we measure that every year. We can always get better, but we want to always make them the priority. In franchising, the franchisee puts all the investment in. They build the buildings, they hire the people, they make 20-year or more commitments to our brand, and it is our responsibility to serve them well.
And in terms of working with franchisees during the economic downturn, did you, as you were putting servant leadership in, did you find that a lot of franchisees, that the concept of servant leadership was a totally foreign or unique idea? And what kind of roadblocks did you face in terms of trying to implement that new culture at your company?
Well, I think most importantly with servant leadership, you don't write speeches about it or make plaques about it. You live it. And so they didn't believe servant leadership until they experienced being well served. And We determined at the outset that if they measured their success by the profitability and returns of their restaurant, that we would measure our success by the same measure. And when you agree on the goal, then you're far better aligned on how to get to the goal. It's far easier to align on how to get to the goal. So we measure their profitability. We measure the returns of our current and new restaurants. And, restaurant profitability is up from 17% margins to 23% margins. And our return on new restaurants is in the mid-20s, which is top tier in our category. So we've delivered for them. So they care about your leadership approach when it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my belief about servant leadership is it must always be tied to performing well for the people that you serve.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Going forward with Popeyes, is it true that now you're expanding into international markets?
Yes, we're growing rapidly in the U.S. and internationally. Last year, we built 200 restaurants and about 120 in the U.S. and about 80 internationally. Today, we're in 26 countries, and in the U.S., we're in 47 states. So we're very widespread in the U.S., but still have an opportunity to double the size of our chain in the United States. And then internationally, the sky's the limit. We're in a lot of countries, but we're not yet in some of the big countries like China, India, Russia, and Brazil. So a lot of growth runway for this brand. And frankly, it's one of the reasons investors love our brand is there's no end in sight
sure.
to the kind of growth that we can generate.
Sure. That's very interesting. Now, are you, is it true you're writing a book about your approach to servant leadership?
Yes, and the book title is the same as the talk that I'll be giving in Coronado.
Oh, okay.
The book is Dare to Serve. It comes out on March 16th, and it talks about how leaders have the courage to take people to a daring destination and the humility to serve them well along the journey. And I believe those traits create the conditions for superior performance results because the people are stretched towards the bold goals and they're treated well. They're valued along the way by their leaders. And that is the formula we've used to take Popeyes from a poor position in 2007 to an industry-leading position this year.
Well, I can guarantee you're going to have a bestseller because March 16th is a great date. That is my brother Bob's birthday. So.
Oh, well, please wish him a happy birthday and I'll sign a book for him.
Good enough. Mary, you had a question?
I do have a question. I have boutiques in San Diego for women that have had cancer, and they come to my boutique to purchase mastectomy products. We have two boutiques. I want to open a third one, and I have thought of maybe in the future having a or creating a franchise. So women all over the U.S. would have a place to go, a private place, a boutique. I was just wondering if you had any advice for someone like myself. I have the courage, just don't know where to start.
Well, that's a really interesting concept. Franchising is an exciting way to expand your business idea quickly across the country because you get other people involved in investing and opening shops like the ones you have, and you use all the good learning you've learned by opening the first two to share with them the success traits. So it is an exciting business model for rapid expansion of a good idea. The advice I gave, first of all, I applaud what you're doing. I'm a breast cancer survivor and know just how important it is to provide services and support to people experiencing cancer.
Thank you.
And I think given the predominance of cancer in our culture, there's a high need for this kind of thing to support people going through this, whether it's the families or the individuals themselves. My advice is that it's really important to get the economics of your model working well, because the primary reason a franchisee invests is to make a good return. They want to feel great about the opportunity that they're selling, the products they're selling. But they also want to invest their money for good returns. So finding that balance between a brilliant idea and great returns on that investment is kind of the sweet spot of franchising.
That's great. Thank you.
Cheryl, sit tight. We've got to take a quick break here, and we're going to be right back with It's Your Money and Your Life.
AM 760 KFMB.
We're back on It's Your Money and Your Life. And I'm with Cheryl Batchelder, CEO of Popeyes Louisiana Kitchen. So, Cheryl, as a woman, do you face any particular challenges in a leadership role that, let's say, men don't face, if I may phrase it that way?
Well, you know, being a woman, I really don't know what challenges men face.
Sure.
So, I've been in leadership for a long time now, and I did, I started my career 35 years ago. So there weren't many women around. And I would tell you, I didn't have a lot of role models. I didn't have a lot of mentors. And I really hope that that's what we've changed the most, is that as there are more women in senior management, it's my words of encouragement to them to please, please, please invest back in the women coming up behind us, and give them the benefit of your experience, give them a safe place to learn, and give them the encouraging words that you wish you had heard in your career. And today, mentoring young women is one of my passions. Within Popeyes, we have a women's leadership forum that meets about every 6 weeks to develop themselves, their leadership skills. And I love to sit down with them and talk about the traits of good leadership and the challenges of women in leadership and help them figure it out, help them navigate.
Yeah, well, I actually feel that capitalism is being feminized, which I think is a great thing as more and more women enter the workforce and then ascend to positions of leadership and management. And, guys used to settle things 30, 40 years ago in ways that weren't necessarily healthy. I think women are much more collaborative.
I think men and women were made differently for a reason. And I think we complement one another nicely in the workplace, just like we do in the home. And I have observed many situations where teams became a nice 50-50 blend, male-female, and lots of things change. In fact, Gallup has done a piece of research that says employee engagement and performance results are optimized when there's a 50-50 mix of men and women. And I think that's logical. I think we both bring talents and unique perspectives. And when we bring those together, and as you said, a collaborative fashion, some really great work can be the outcome.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think diversity is so important to accomplish true collaboration.
Because yes,
that allows different opinions and thoughts and ways of thinking to enter the marketplace. Hey, speaking about how you collaborate and get constituents to buy into your vision and so on, I know Popeyes also even thinks about the living beings that are part of the product, that goes into the food. I know you have an animal welfare statement. Can you talk about that briefly? Because I think that's just such a wonderful thing to do and have.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I'm saying, can you talk briefly? Your firm has an animal welfare statement.
Yes.
And I just think that's an amazing thing to have. Can you talk briefly about, what was behind that? Who came up with that? Why you brought that into play as part of your corporate culture?
Well, we have that on our website as part of our social responsibility. And we want our policies and our approaches and everything that we do to be clear. So our animal welfare policies are published. Our people policies are published. Our purpose and principles are published. I think today in business, you operate in a fishbowl. And I think there's a lot of good things about operating in a fishbowl. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to be transparent about your values and how you make decisions. I think both franchisees and investors and employees want to know who they work for. And so I'm really proud of the transparency with which we operate with our stakeholders. And I think it's a key to our success.
Hey, jumping back to your book quickly, are you going to have a separate website for your book? And if so, is it premature to let people know what that is or what the date will be when that will be up?
My book site is up right now, and it is daretoserveleaders.com.
Okay, daretoserveleaders.com.
That's right.
Good.
And one thing I might mention about that is that we're also going to build small group discussion guides that will enable people to have group discussions, mm-hmm. brown bag lunches, that kind of thing, to discuss the book. And I think for women, for men, for all leaders who are trying to figure out their best path to performance, I think it'll provide some stimulating conversation.
And question, I wrote a book that became a bestseller in 2013, and I'm just curious about your experiences. Has it been more work or less work than you thought it was going to be?
Oh, definitely more work.
Me too.
It's very hard. I'm not an author. My day job is my best capability, and I had to learn to write and communicate in stories and create a real architecture of the message. And so I spent a lot of time learning to write and meeting with other authors to learn what made their books successful. And so I'm indebted to those people that have helped me along the way, including Ken Blanchard and Colleen Barrett at Southwest Airlines and Joel Manby, who wrote Love Works. A lot of people willing to share their experience and help me along the way.
I tell people, if you want to learn how to be humble, if you want to learn some humility, write a book and then deal with your editor and you will become very humble.
Yes, no, it's good for that. That's for sure.
Because that's what editors are here for. They're here to make you humble. So how do you vision the future of Popeyes, let's say over the next five to 6 or 7 years? I mean, if you could look at the company 5 years from now in an ideal world, what would it look like?
Well, I've been there 7 years, and the first 7 years have been about bringing the brand back to life, making it vibrant, relevant, contemporary for our employees and for our guests. Fueling our business with new products and making sure we're profitable. The next 5 to 7 years is about really stepping up our game for what we call employee engagement mm-hmm. and guest engagement. We think our food is superior to all our competitors. We marinate our chicken in restaurant, cook it fresh. We have the most flavorful food in our sector made fresh for you every day. And so we have stunning food. And 5 to 7 years from now, we want to say we have stunning, we are a stunning place to work and a stunning place to be served. And so this whole servant leadership idea is one that we want to bring all the way through our restaurants to the front counter and to our guests. We're in the business of serving people well. We want that to be evident to every employee and every guest.
Yeah, those are great goals to have. Hey, before we wrap up, can I just ask a couple of personal questions so people know a little bit more about you? Is it true that you were a piano major at the University of Indiana?
Yes, it actually is.
Okay.
I played piano for 18 years and studied it at Indiana University. And then I found out that there weren't enough piano teacher jobs in the world.
Okay.
So I switched to business school, studied finance and marketing, and off we went.
Were you there when Bobby Knight was the basketball coach?
I was. In fact, one summer I lived in a house across the street from his house and watched him mow his lawn.
And if the lawnmower didn't work, did he like pick it up and smash it on the ground? What did he do?
No, he was very calm when he was mowing his lawn. I didn't see any good antics there.
Okay, because I've heard stories.
Know, he was fun to watch. He was obviously a colorful leader on the court. But one thing he did well is he invested in his talent, created great teams. And his guys always graduated from college and did well. So that's what he was good at.
Were you there when they won the national championship in the mid-70s?
Yes, twice.
Oh, how exciting. Yeah, that
it
must have been very
exciting.
And is it true that you also sang a cappella and your a cappella group once upon a time backed up a Van Morrison song? I read that somewhere. Is that true or is that just a rumor?
Yeah, we can't find the record, but in my senior year of high school, I sang in a Madrigal group in my high school and we traveled all over California. It's a school in Cupertino, California. And he heard us sing somewhere and asked us to come tape backups for him. And it was really exciting and really fun.
Do you remember the song?
No, I don't. Everybody always asks me then. I feel like an idiot because I can't remember the song we sang. It's been a long time, but what an honor. It was fun.
Cheryl, any last comments on servant leadership and what it's meant to you and your company?
Well, you know, I think the challenge with servant leadership, if you haven't been exposed to it, is that it can sound weak-kneed, soft. I call it kumbaya and campfires. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, servant leadership is just we all stand around and talk. And that's not the case. Servant leadership is the best and most strenuous approach to leading organizations to high performance. It is very aspirational. None of us serve people well every single day of our lives. We're all selfish and we get in our own way. We don't think of others, but when we do, when we organize our business plans around how well they serve our employees, our franchisees, our investors, we can create the conditions for superior performance. So I would really provoke your listeners to stop thinking about it as some soft, nice guy kind of leadership and start thinking about it as the boldest, most aspirational, and the best shot at high performance results that you could take.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing way to approach it because it's just such a different concept when you flip that hierarchical approach to leadership over and put the leader at the bottom of the pyramid, so to speak, as opposed to the person at the top shouting out orders to all the people below.
It's much harder to serve others well than it is to meet your own career goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a real test of leaders to see if they can flip that org chart around and start thinking about the business strategies in terms of how they set the people up for success. That is much more difficult, much more aspirational than it is to serve your own purposes. So I challenge your readers, your listeners, to read about it, think about it, meet people who have some practice in it, and take their leadership to the next level.
Cheryl, I really appreciate you carving some time out of your very, very busy day to spend some time with us. And we look forward to seeing you in lovely Coronado, California on March 9th and 10th.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing you then.
All right. Thanks so much.
AM 760 KFMB.
Hi, this is Richard Musio, and we're back, and it's time to thank our sponsors. We couldn't do this great show without our wonderful sponsors, and in no particular order, that would be UBS, Mr. Michael Caranta and Drew Freitas from UBS on Prospect Street in La Jolla. Thank you very much. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic, CPAs in Vista, that's Don Epic, CPA, and Paul Polito, CPA. Our other most favorite CPA on the planet, Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics, the best CFO firm here in San Diego. Brenda Geiger with the law office of Brenda Geiger. Brenda specializes in asset protection and estate planning. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners with business valuation and understanding the risks that drive the values of their businesses and how to reduce those risks and increase business value. Our new banking sponsor, California Republic Bank with Lane Elliott, specializing in working with wealthy families and family offices. Hub International Insurance, formerly Mars Maddox Insurance. Neil Staley, going to be an upcoming guest here in March. Experts in the Health Care Act and employee benefits. Stop Financial Elder Abuse Alliance with Paul Hines from Hearthstone Wealth Management. And certainly last but not least, Servant Leadership Institute. Check out servantleadershipinstitute.com. And of course, they are the subject of tonight's show. So a big thank you to all of our sponsors. And if any listeners want more information about our sponsors, how to find them, what they do, everything is up on our website at iymoney.com. So artfully maintained by Courtney Lover with PopX Graphics. So again, check out iymoney.com for more information about our great sponsors. And we are here with Scott Schimmel, who is the co-founder and president of U-School, and he's going to be one of the presenters at the Servant Leadership Institute event that's coming up on March 9th and 10th in lovely Coronado, California at the Coronado Marriott. That's Servant Leadership Institute's fifth annual national conference. Information at servantleadershipinstitute.com. Scott, really appreciate you being here. How are you today?
I'm great. It's hard to complain when you're in San Diego in January.
Yeah, I know. I periodically check the weather of all my friends in different places back east in the Midwest, and I almost feel guilty living here. But I said almost feel guilty living here.
We call this sunpocalypse.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So you've got a really interesting business, U-School. Vocational focus, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Beyond that, but absolutely, helping people figure themselves out by way of work and much more.
Because let me ask a question. I mean, I've got three kids who are 23, 22, and 18, and I've always encouraged them to pursue their passion and follow their dream as opposed to, for example, taking the right AP courses in high school and going to the right college and getting the right job.
Good for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Actually, it's even better for them because they've turned out to be amazingly independent and bright and interesting kids who are really concerned about their world and their community. But do you find that a lot of kids don't necessarily take on that certain track successfully because they really have other interests and passions that maybe they should be more interested in following?
Yeah, I think it completely depends on what kind of students you're talking about. I spent a lot of time in different demographics. So the high achieving, let's say the private school or the high achieving public schools, mm-hmm. I think there's quite a bit of mentality of just do what's expected of you. Mm-hmm. And what's expected of you is a lot. It's like you said, AP classes. It's not one sport. It's two, three sports. It's piano. It's just get involved and do everything. And in some ways, the message is be successful at all costs, and particularly the cost of you, mm-hmm. your passions and your interests. And one of the terms we've been developing over the last couple of years working with students is it's really important to follow your passions. And first, it's even more important to figure out what those are. But let's say you do get a dream for your life. You know, that dream actually has to be grounded in reality. So we call it you get a sober dream.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably watched like American Idol, like that's on right now. And first few episodes, they're just classic. People that come in pre-interview and they say, oh, I'm a star. I'm, mm-hmm. Get ready, America. You're going to see what kind of talent I have. And then they go in front of the judges and they're awful. I mean,
right.
they're just atrocious.
Right.
And then the judges tell them so. And they come out. And the most interesting part is a lot of the time in that exit interview, there's people that look in the camera and say, the judges got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I am talented. I will be back. And I just want to think, like, those people, one, don't have a friend that tells them the truth. And two, I mean, all that passion, all that energy, all that drive, just sadly, tragically misguided. And so what does it look like to develop a dream that is appropriately sober, that does have things anchored in there, like pay the bills? You got to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
But life does go better if you're closer to the sweet spot. I think everybody agrees with that.
Scott, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back on It's Your Money and Your Life. Everybody, hang on. We're back with It's Your Money and Your Life. So tell me, Scott, what was the genesis for founding U School? How did that come to be?
There's a couple sides of the story. I spent 10 years working with college students, and after about 8.5 years, realized I couldn't think of too many college students that I worked on all the top-tier schools in San Diego, every campus. Couldn't mm-hmm. think of too many students that graduated, went off, started life, and were doing well. And that's probably a nice way to tell a story.
Sure.
I sat down with hundreds of them, and young professionals, 22, 32, they told me, you know, frankly, I'm miserable. And life is not the way I thought it would turn out. And I really have no idea what to do next. And so I started to kind of reverse engineer that and think, okay, what's going on in college? Because in high school, there's this great theory. You don't need to figure yourself out yet. That's what college is for.
Sure.
Go out and find yourself. And then I think in college, it starts to translate into, okay, I still don't know. I haven't found myself yet. And then you get parents saying, well, you don't really need to find your thing. Go out and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll find your thing. And that's, you can call that trial and error. That's one way to do life. So noticing almost all, if not, you know, 95% of students graduating and not making much with their life, not doing much, not making much meaning, not finding much joy, not even sticking with jobs for very long. I was in the ground in the trenches, and then co-founders with U School, guys that have done consulting, branding, innovation design stuff, were sick of inheriting executive teams as clients, made up of a bunch of insanely successful execs running huge million, billion-dollar budgets and departments who, if you pull back the layer a little bit, they would confess, I'm miserable,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know how I got here. And now I've got a wife and kids and a mortgage, and I don't know how to get out of this. So we came together and said, there's got to be a better way to do life. But two, what is that? How do you actually help somebody on the front end of their life figure themselves out so that the rest of their lives, they're making wise, informed choices for the right reasons? And so we've been up and at them for a couple of years now and seen quite a lot of fruit in terms of impact.
Yeah, it's really neat. I'm 56, and I still haven't figured out what I want to do when I grow up, but I'm well, having a lot of fun.
Don't sound like the president.
Exactly, but I'm having a lot of fun, you know, just getting paid for being me and doing the things I do every day that I hope make my community a better place. So I've got no complaints. I'm a really lucky guy.
You're making that work.
Really lucky guy. So tell me, you're going to be at the Servant Leadership Institute event. I believe you're leading one of the breakout sessions, correct?
That's right, yep.
So what does all of this that we just talked about, what on earth does it have to do with servant leadership?
Well, great question, because I've been watching students graduate into the workplace for the last 13 years. And I think a part of that, one, it's kept me pretty young. And two, to be in the mentality of what young people want and what they're looking for. I think if you Google right now, Gen Y in the workplace, millennials in the workplace, mm-hmm. what you'll find is probably hundreds of thousands of hits, articles, and the vast 99% of them are complaints about these young kids who are taking over the workplace and I forget what all the stats are. In 2025, they're going to be more than 50% of the workplace. They're coming, and it's all pretty bad news because they're entitled, they're selfish, they're narcissistic.
Right, they don't know what a piece of paper is.
Yeah, totally. They've never worked for anything, and a big part of why I'm motivated to be a part of the servant leadership conversation is I think they get a bad rap unfairly. And what I think they're asking for, young people in general, is to be led well. And that's where servant leadership comes in. Servant leadership as a philosophy says, I will forsake what I want and what I need so that I can serve you, come alongside you, and figure out what you want and what you need. And that's really good leadership and good management. And so to translate servant leadership as a philosophy into an actual framework with process and principles to develop and harness all the potential of young people, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and let me ask you a question. If it's off point, just say so and we won't go there. But I work with some very wealthy older folks, and they also have in their family second and third generation family members that are millennials and so on, and they're very bright, creative young people. And I've noticed a real disconnect, let's say, between the baby boom generation and millennials, because in the one case of the baby boomers, they feel like now they're sort of getting to be ignored because, for one thing, they tend to not be very technologically competent, which makes it difficult for them to participate in the way information and energy moves today. Yet they tend to possess a huge amount of experience and wisdom, having been through things like World War II and the economic boom of this country in the 1950s and Vietnam and the women's liberation movement and the civil rights movement. And then on the other hand, you have millennials who are really bright, creative young people who don't want to do it the old way. And I think they're dying to be mentored, but they don't necessarily connect with the older generation because, again, the millennials are so dialed into, like I said, they don't even know what a piece of paper is. They transmit information and knowledge seamlessly, you know, through the internet and outer space without ever even touching the things that the older folks are looking at touching. Do you feel that there's a gap between these two generations with X and Y, I guess, sort of being stuck in the middle that somehow we need to bridge? Because I just find the wisdom of the older generation to be of such great value. And I find that the passion and the intellectual capability of the young people to just be beyond belief. And I always ask myself, how can we bring all of this together to make the world a better place?
I think, well, you definitely framed that right. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think a part of what happens when there's distance is we tend to resort to reacting out of that. Mm-hmm. And for instance, I think oftentimes I'll sit with some older folks and, like you said, desperate for their wisdom, very interested in their stories. And very quickly they turn into pontificating and lecturing. And it's what I did when I was your age. And some of that for sure is accurate and relevant, but at least half, it frankly, isn't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, from a young generation who has had their hands held, and from the first day you get into class, here's what's expected of you to get an A. People that really haven't had to take much initiative in terms of their learning.
Right, they've been micromanaged by mommy and daddy.
Yeah. So I see a generation that doesn't quite know how to ask good questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it's oversimplifying, but if we can, in a servant leadership posture, have older folks say, gosh, what would it be like for me to come alongside, not to stand on top of, but come alongside a younger generation and have a good conversation, to maybe even ask a few questions first, to maybe even ask for permission. Hey, I've got some stories I'd love to share with you if you're interested. I know the answer would be yes. And on the flip side, for some younger folks to actually take the posture of sitting at someone's feet and coming up with a set of really good questions, that's something I've been telling young people all the time. If you are going to get the opportunity to sit down in front of people that have done things that you could only dream of. So what are your questions? What are your go-to questions? The 6-10 things that you just have, like, type them in your phone, pull them up when you sit down at a table next to somebody that's been there, done that. And I think you can see really great conversations start to happen as we learn from one another.
Yeah, and I think it's critical that we find ways to do that, because I think it's very clear that the older generations are going to work longer, you know, with the public pension crisis and everything else. Yeah. They're saying that people 65, 70, 75, they may change careers or do things on a part-time basis, but they'll still be in the workforce, whereas 20, 30 years ago, you didn't see people of that age in the workforce. And so in a sense, they're competing for the same jobs in some cases with the younger crowd. And that in and of itself could cause some conflict too. And so I think finding ways to frame really coherent and accretive discussions, I think it's going to be critical for the future of all generations.
And I think if you refuse the posture of suspicion or competition, instead have an assumption. Mm-hmm. What if we all have an assumption that the other person has value and mm-hmm. has something to share and a gift? And I'm curious about that, and I'm going to seek out what that is. I think we would see a lot of potential harness. I mean, that's an overused general statement, but there is potential that we're sitting on. The power of wisdom and combined with the power of people that have quite a bit of energy and technological skill. I mean, to put that together, I think you're right. There's quite a bit of opportunity there.
But Scott, we're really looking forward to having you out at the Servant Leadership Institute event on March 9th and 10th in Coronado. And again, it's servantleadershipinstitute.com. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to spend some time with us talking about what we've got coming up. It's very, very exciting stuff. So thank you again.
Absolutely. Go back and enjoy the sunshine.
All right. You as well. Take care, Scott. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
As always, a big thank you to Eric Rubalcava on the board, helping us out as he does so professionally every Saturday night. Also, big thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius, and Craig Blanke on the sales side. My partner Joe Vecchio will be back when the Servant Leadership Institute series is done. He's been out working on a special film project. So again, thanks everybody. Join us next week on It's Your Money and Your Life. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you.
AM 760.
When you need to find a part at a price that's right, that red and blue sign is just within sight. Roll in to CarQuest and roll on.
Domestic, European, or Asian, CarQuest has the right parts to keep you safely on the road. With over 800,000 products available, you're sure to find exactly what you need when you visit CarQuest Auto Parts. Great people, great products, great prices.
Welcome to Staples.
Hey, Staples guy, how do I know I'm getting the best price on this laptop?
Staples will match our competitors' prices, even if you find it online.
What about this tablet?
Price match guarantee.
And the smartphone?
Yep.
What about these ink cartridges, my chances of winning the lottery, and toner?
Guaranteed, no way guaranteed, guaranteed.
Make on budget happen, make best prices happen. Staples, make more happen. Now at Staples, save up to $220 on select HP laptops powered by...